tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast, David and Nikki Nellis. We're broadcasting from our fabulous glassed-in, palatial glassed-in enclosure here at DC's equally as fabulous Line Hotel in Adams Morgan. We got a great show today. The whole conversation about plant-based diets is swirling around for a lot of reasons, for better health and for the fact that all these animals that everybody's raising are befouling the earth with their poo and with their methane that comes out of their tushies and all of that. And, you know, plant-based, you know, living is probably so much better for us. There are a lot of people that turn up their noses at it because they don't think it tastes good. And we're here to address that.
Well, I don't think it's just because it doesn't taste good. Most people are raised on a steady, in America
meat
especially,
and potatoes, right.
are fed a steady diet that incorporates meat. And we've sort of been trained from an early age to have a piece of protein on your plate.
But I also think it's because when you go to many restaurants, I won't say most, you know, the vegetable alternative is gross, you know.
Well, I really don't agree with
it's
that assessment.
It's not appealing. It's just, you know.
I don't agree with that assessment.
I agree with that assessment.
I don't agree with that assessment at all. Right.
But
right.
Today, Ron Nussbacher is with us today, and we're going to be talking about Shook, which is his plant-based restaurant that is amazing. We've
I
had
feel like
food.
We should be playing AC/DC, Shook Me All Night Long.
No,
Alexia, can we make some music happen? No. I know it's a different Shook, but still. You don't like that?
No, I'm exhausted from the whole thing. But anyways.
Okay.
No. No, what else? Oh, no.
You
know,
you have something to say?
I'm just thinking about Led Zeppelin's okay. You Shook Me. But anyways, that's a whole other thing. So Ron was on Foodie and the Beast about a year ago, am I right?
Yeah.
And he and his partner came in, and we basically started off with the same conversation. You know, we'll talk about how good it is in a couple of minutes. But why don't we do a little bit of your background and how you got here and why you're doing this?
Right, because you started in a tech career.
I started as a tech career, yeah. I started in Israel many, many years ago.
You're the founder of Microsoft, correct?
We don't talk about that.
Right. That's on the DL.
Yeah, I did spend about 10 years before Shook in tech. And actually, my most recent experience was with a company called Opower. And Opower was a mission-based tech company. And the idea was that we feel that there's a lot of waste of energy around. And yeah, there's a way to reduce carbon emissions and save the environment if we were to not waste as much energy. So combining psychology, behavior science, technology, we figured out a way to get people to save just a little bit of energy at home by convincing them to turn off lights when they leave the room or...
Could you have a conversation with our daughter sometime?
He's like, I don't do that anymore. Okay, so go ahead, finish.
Yeah, so long story short, through that experience, I've seen how addressing habitual behaviors and small behaviors with people towards a greater end, if you do it at scale, what may seem meaningless on the individual level, if you do it across millions of people, you can drive real societal impact. In our case, it was taking power plants off the grid and saving as much energy as the entire solar industry in the U.S. And that idea is what I took with me to start Shook, with the mission being changing how we eat.
But what was it about how you ate that made you decide you needed to change the way how other people ate?
So I would venture to say that back in the day, I was no different than a lot of people who probably come on the show, who consider themselves foodies. And I would always go for the most abstract and interesting item on the menu. There was a point maybe about 10 to 15 years ago, and I can't tell you exactly what triggered it, but there was an inner voice that said, there's something wrong about that. The idea of hunting or fishing or killing an animal for my own nutrition didn't sit well with me. And yet I would go to a restaurant and eat it and order off the menu. And that,
it's very hard to reckon as an animal lover and a meat eater. It's hard to reconcile.
It really
is. So I'm with you there.
Yeah. So the voice got stronger. over time. Probably took a couple of years for the voice to get louder at some point.
You sure it wasn't your mother?
Yeah, it was definitely not my mother. You should have heard my mother when I told her. My Jewish mother.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
We've all got them.
Yep. So I decided to run an experiment, and it wasn't a New Year's resolution. It wasn't a commitment. I just said, let's see what happens if I just stop eating meat. I still ate other things at the time, dairy and fish. And the more I did it, the more I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to separate the physiological from the psychological.
Well, I'm just curious. Since you were living in Israel, were you keeping kosher?
No, I never grew up kosher.
You didn't grow up kosher.
And this happened in the U.S. already.
This happened. Okay, you were already in the U.S.
But I never grew up kosher.
Okay, I was just curious.
Not at all.
Okay.
I would eat the most non-kosher items possible.
Okay.
In fact.
Would you like a bacon burger?
Well, not now, but maybe back then.
That's right.
Okay, so you slowly started taking...
Yeah, removing things.
So you started with dairy?
I started with meat.
Okay.
And I stopped eating meat.
All meat proteins?
All meat.
Okay.
Yeah, chicken.
Right.
Was that cold turkey or...
Cold turkey. And it felt great. And it felt great on a physiological level, on a psychological level. It got me a lot more interested in learning about our food system in the U.S. and how things get to our plates. Mm-hmm. And the more I did it, the more I learned, the more excited I became. And that was the sentiment. It was excitement, not the feeling of lack, but excitement about what I was doing.
Okay, so you'd get rid of animal meat.
Yeah.
Chicken, cow... Pig, shellfish, fish?
Not at first. About 2 years later.
You took...
Those went as well.
Okay, you got rid of dairy.
And then lastly, dairy and eggs were the final frontier.
So my whole thing about dairy and eggs, and I totally support a vegan diet, don't get me wrong, but that takes cake off the table.
No.
I mean, I know there is cake, don't get me wrong. I know there is vegan cake. But I just struggle with that component that... You know, if you're in a bakery or somebody serves cookies.
Like these cookies?
Well, no, your cookies, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do.
It give
just,
me a cookie.
Okay.
I'll tell you.
I know, but we're not there yet.
Oh, we're getting
there.
He just
can't wait. You know what I mean? But so did you find it difficult as you took each of these things off the table, as you slowly went vegan?
Yeah.
You never found any difficulty in, other than maybe your mother giving you a hard time.
He's very serene. I don't think he had any
integrating this into your life.
On the contrary, it was actually really exciting. And I know it sounds bizarre to a lot of people that I say that, mm-hmm. but it was exciting because, first of all, it forces you to innovate and discover and play with new flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool to see what you can do with the plant world.
Mm-hmm.
Anything
this cookie is awesome.
I know, that cookie's delicious.
I remember it from when you were on the show last time.
Yeah,
now
it's fabulous.
Thank you.
I can't tell the difference.
I'd say it's even better. But I'm biased.
Right, of course.
You can't tell the difference between the other best.
No, it was exciting. It was fun to rediscover and flavors, experiment with new ones.
Mm-hmm.
No, not at any point did I feel that I was giving anything up. On the contrary, I felt that I gained something. Yeah.
And so at what point did you say, and now I need to get into the food world? Because here you are in the tech world with no real food world experience at this point, right?
Not even as
a
dishwasher.
Not even a little bit. Just not even a little
Nothing.
Bit. So you're like, I want to serve this kind of food to everybody.
So wait, so you make your mother wash the dishes? That's terrible.
No.
She volunteers.
Huh.
So... How did you jump from one to the other?
So there's a sense of calling. And I don't mean it in a very dramatic manner, but as I was sitting there, you know, working with this tank company and driving towards this mission that I did care about, because I do care about the environment quite a bit, after having transformed my own diet and my own lifestyle, and this goes beyond food, it also extends to what we wear and essentially how you behave in the world in general. I felt that that's what I wanted to do with my life, that it was my life's mission to help and open up people's appetites and minds and awareness to the fact that there is another way to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt, and I've seen firsthand from my tech experience, that business not only can play a powerful role, but I think actually it's the responsibility of the business community to play that role.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt that I was in a position to start a business that would provide a product or a service or both that would make it possible for people to experiment and experience and hopefully open up to that alternative.
Well, let's go to that moment.
I mean,
what did you do?
What did you do? And what did you decide? Were you eating someplace else and you were like, I could do this better? Or how did it evolve to create Shook, which we should tell people is S-H-O-U-K, and it means market in Hebrew.
Yeah. It wasn't an aha moment overnight. It involved some research, reaching out into the community that of people who were either business people or leaders in plant-based ventures, and asking around and trying to figure out what did the market need, mm-hmm. what was missing, what would be most impactful to that could reach many people. And in fact, the food business has a reputation that it deserves, which is a tough business.
It's razor thin margins.
Yeah, razor thin margins, very competitive. So I think no tech person in the right mind would jump into the food world unless they had a very good reason. And my reason was that the food world, more broadly in the fast casual sector in particular, offers an unmatched opportunity to get in front of people. Mm-hmm. It is highly, highly accessible, both from a price point and from a physical reach by virtue of having a chain and many stores. And you're able to get your product and your idea in front of many people. And that was where the rubber met the road the most out of everything. So it really was thinking of Shook and the fast casual restaurant idea as a vehicle towards this greater mission.
Well, you were sort of coming up with this idea really at the time that fast casual was even getting its name, right?
Right.
So, you know, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, there was no fast casual. You know, Sweetgreen is really one of the first in this city to sort of execute the concept of something sustainable, working like taking the fine dining concept of working with farmers and, you know, a beautiful aesthetic and there's a mission and a lesson to learn sort of when you go there. Like, we don't carry X because it's not local or it's right. not whatever it is, you know, whatever story they're telling this month. But I think that was a real aha moment for a lot of people. And we're like, oh, yes, I can do that, too. I can tell my story and tell it for a reasonable price and engage with people because people are willing to spend, you know, instead of the $1.99 at McDonald's, which, I mean, I hate bringing up, but they were the original fast food.
Sure.
People are willing to spend, you know, $8 to $15 for lunch or for something that's better for them in a fast casual concept.
Absolutely.
I mean, I assume that's part of your research, right? When
yes.
you were getting into this.
Yes.
You don't strike me as somebody who would have just jumped in without checking the data first, right?
Yes, absolutely. We did our homework for sure, but like any venture, there's an element of
surprise.
Well, that's for sure. Right. Of belief, of blind belief in what you're doing and the importance of it. And
so what did you do? What did you, how did you decide on your menu and how did you decide on your mission and your story that you wanted to tell?
Sure. So the mission was, it evolved from my own personal experience and conviction that this is important for the reasons that you've mentioned, David. The planet is sick and we're sick and mm-hmm. And frankly, we're running out of food. You know, 80% of farmland globally is being used to raise livestock. So with the rate of our population growth, you know, it doesn't mm-hmm. add up. It's going to happen anyway. So the mission was clear. For me, there was a feeling, maybe from my own personal experience, that at least when you went out, unless you were cooking at home, there was a big compromise that you as a vegetarian or vegan had to make.
Mm-hmm.
You had to choose between food that was good for you and jived with your ideals or food that was good.
Mm-hmm.
And having grown up in Israel in a society that is not vegetarian, but one where vegetables, legumes, grains.
But it's very vegetarian friendly.
Very vegetarian friendly. And mm-hmm. we love that stuff. And we know how to work with it very well.
Well, an Israeli cuisine does not incorporate, I mean, there's lots of meat, lamb, and
yeah.
chicken in Israeli cuisine, but it's not incorporated into every, like omitting it from the dish does not ruin the dish. You know, where I feel
That's
like
right.
in the States, like there's bacon and everything, you know, like there's a lot of dishes that the protein is an important, that meat protein is an important composition to the dish.
I think in the US in particular, it's the main thing, whereas mm-hmm. the vegetable is considered a little,
it's
you know,
a side.
It's a side. Whereas in Middle Eastern Israeli cuisine, that's not the case at all. It is not the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I've grown up in a world where I saw it done better, mm-hmm. and I knew it could be done better. And of course, there was the Israeli ethnic angle, which I thought would be interesting. Mm-hmm. And unique to the American palate. Everybody knows hummus. Everybody knows falafel. Our culinary world goes far beyond those two items. And
well,
I was excited.
I think it's also interesting because people think, a lot of people know there's hummus and falafel in Israeli food, but people who, especially American Jews, American Jewish food is nothing like Israeli food. Do you know what I mean?
There's Israeli food is Mediterranean. American Jewish food is Eastern European.
Right. I mean, you know, delis, pastrami, you know, matzo ball soup. I mean,
herring and sour cream,
right,
baby.
Do you know what I mean? Like kreplach. I mean, think of some of those dishes. But, I don't know if people really understand that they're really very separate and very different cuisines.
Well, I put a spin on that. Israeli cuisine, and in particular modern Israeli food, is about marrying those two things. It's about marrying the Middle Eastern, Palestinian, old Jewish from that part of the world traditions with the traditions brought over by, you know, my family who immigrated from Romania and other areas of Europe, from Jews that came from North Africa. So modern Israeli cuisine is all about, it's a mishmash. It's taking all those traditional flavors, combining them in new ways. I like to think of it as coloring outside the lines a lot. It's not just one tradition.
In a minute, he's going to use the word fusion.
No, I don't like fusion. So that word, and we talked about this yesterday on air on Foodie and the Beast with this Peruvian chef who's doing Peruvian food with a Japanese influence. Yeah. You know, all of a sudden, fusion has become like a dirty word in the culinary industry, which is, it should be a dirty word, but I guess people are off put by it. I guess it's been overused.
It's been overused.
Yeah. So
nobody wants it anymore. That's called refusion. Thanks.
So
did you just laugh?
Not really. Oh, I just,
so cute.
I just giggled. Okay, so how did you decide what you wanted on the menu, and how did you decide how many things you were going to, like, from a business perspective, you know, because you can overdo the menu, you can underdo the menu. What did you start with on the menu? And so how long have you guys been in business now?
We opened two and a half years ago. Okay. We opened our first location.
So how did it, what did that first menu look like, and how has it evolved and changed?
So the first menu I wrote on a piece of paper, it probably had about 8 or 9 items on it, some of which are on the menu today still, some are long gone.
Like what?
Like our cauliflower pita, roasted cauliflower with tahina sauce and some other good things in the pita. That has been on that initial page.
Well, cauliflower is so, like, that's like a menu. It's like kale. Do you know what I mean? It's the new kale, cauliflower. It's on everybody's menu.
But it's also a very, very traditional, that combination of cauliflower tossed with tahina sauce is also very traditional to Israel and the Middle East. I'm trying to think what else is on the menu that was there. Probably not much.
When you got started, were you looking for the space while writing the menu, or were you?
I was looking for the space while writing the menu, while also looking for a chef partner, because I am not that.
Right.
I was randomly introduced. It took me about 1.5 to 2 years of searching and talking to chefs from across the U.S. and Israel both. Until I was randomly introduced to Dennis Friedman, who was running a restaurant, a fine dining restaurant in Bethesda at the
time. Right. Nest? Right? No, was it Nest?
It was Newton's Table.
Newton's Table, right.
Yeah. And I rolled into his kitchen with my little piece of paper that had cauliflower and other vegetables on it. I think it may have had a fennel pita. And I said, I'm looking to do this vegan thing. And oh, by the way, we can't use any processed or imitative items. So we're not going to use tofu or seitan or anything that is traditionally used by plant-based restaurants. I want this to be 100% fresh food, you know, vegetables, nuts, legumes, seeds. And he looked at me weird.
Well, I'm looking at you weird because I would assume, why would you go that route? Why no tofu? What's wrong with tofu?
Nothing inherently wrong with tofu. Two reasons. Main, tofu is not part of our culture in Israel. It doesn't fit perfectly.
And they sort of, like, to me, and we had, this is years ago, we had, or maybe it was last year, Compassion Over Killing was on our show with Erica Meyer. And we talked about some of these products that are tofu-based, specifically, that are seitan, is that how it's pronounced?
Seitan, yeah.
So that are sort of compressed or or manipulated to be bacon or bacon flavored or
turkey like,
you know, or bologna or whatever it is. And I'm like, here's what I don't understand. If you have decided to go vegan or vegetarian or whatever it is you have decided to go, like, why do you want to taste bacon? Like, I don't understand why you would want something.
Well, because I don't think that's inconsistent. You can like the taste without
wanting the product.
Without wanting to kill a pig. Mm.
I agree. At Shook, we follow a different route.
Right.
And the reason is that we built Shook to appeal to everybody else. Mm-hmm. We didn't build a restaurant that was designed for vegetarians or vegans. We built it for everybody else. And the idea was that to do that effectively, we need to stay away from anything that pretended to be something it's not. Because, you know, if you want a chicken sandwich and you're able to eat one,
go get a chicken sandwich. Right?
You're not going to get my faux chicken sandwich. It's not going to be as good. I can promise you that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come to Shook to get something you cannot get anywhere else. And, oh, by the way, I'll show you how amazing vegetables can be.
Well, I'm trying to remember, what is your big seller? We had a bunch of different things when you were on the show last time, and they were sort of sandwichy and pita-y and all of that. What's the big seller?
So the big seller until very recently has been our Shook burger, which is, you know, unlike tofu and seitan, it's mm-hmm. a veggie burger that does not pretend to be meat. It is just a very, very good veggie burger. It's also featured on the Food Network as one of the best in the country. That's our best seller.
And what is it?
So the patty itself we make from about 20 different ingredients, different vegetables, legumes, nuts and seeds, all go in there. It's not even ground. Mm-hmm. So as you bite into it, you can see all the pieces. So it truly is a vegetable patty, a vegetable burger.
Mm-hmm.
And in our kind of traditional way of putting our own Israeli spin on it, it's served instead of a bun, inside of a pita with tahini sauce. Slow roasted tomatoes, arugula, pickled turnip.
It was a real treat. Right?
Thank you.
Well, when you met with the chef and you started going over the menu with him, what was he like? Yeah, we got to do that. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this instead. How did you guys negotiate what was on the menu?
We tried everything. Okay. So we just started making it. And you imagine, you know, me and him in his back kitchen at Newton's table, mm-hmm. surrounded by meat. This was a kind of a French-oriented cuisine, hacking at vegetables. We just started cooking, and things that we loved, we carried forward, and things that we didn't, we stopped. Then we brought in our friends and families and investors and did these elaborate dinners and collected scientific feedback as we could.
Sure.
And eventually, so part of it was the flavoring and what really resonated. Part of it was the operation and how we can operationalize a particular dish in the kitchen. We are very much, you mentioned Sweet Green and this idea of taking fine dining attention to produce, to product, mm-hmm. as well as techniques. We very much do that. But how do we do that in a way that we can still get you out of there in 5 to 7 minutes? Which is what's required out of fast casual today.
Sure.
So a lot of that dictated, you know, what can we execute correctly in mm-hmm. that time frame without degrading quality. But since we've launched in the last 2.5 years, many dishes have come and gone as well, and the menu has evolved quite a bit.
Well, let's talk about the pita.
Yeah.
Because since it's used so frequently within the menu, did you guys develop your own or do you source it? How does that work?
We were going down the path of developing our own because we wanted something very specific. Mm-hmm. Our pita is very different than what you may find at Whole Foods or another supermarket. I think in the U.S., we're typically used to thin, almost brittle, rather dry pita bread. This is Israeli style. Even within Israel, there are different styles of pita, and
sure.
this is something closer to what over there we call Yemeni style pita.
Mm-hmm.
So it has thickness and a little bit of moisture and almost air pockets, akin to an English muffin a little bit.
So for people who haven't had it, so I think people in the States assume all pita is you're supposed to split it and put something inside.
Fill the pocket.
Do you know I fill a pocket? Because I became really big in the 80s.
So ours definitely like that? Works that way.
It works that way.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's not the only way to do it.
Right.
Because
you can just fold it over too.
There are different pita styles that would be more of a wrap.
Mm-hmm.
But the traditional pita, especially where I come from in Israel, that part of the world, is the pocket. So you knock the top off. It is open on the inside.
Think of that. You could be an Israeli rapper in the pita business.
Uh-huh. No, it's, don't even give it to him. So are you making your own or you're not?
We're not making our own. We found a partner. It's actually an Israeli bakery that makes it for us. So
to your specifications.
Yeah.
And is it does that require a lot of oversight or no?
No.
Now that the relationship is there, it's totally working.
Yeah.
Okay, great. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk more about how plant-based living really affects the environment and everybody's lifestyle and climate change, everything. There's a lot to learn.
I know why you're looking at me. I'm with you.
Yeah, I know you are.
Let's do it.
Love it.
I just want another cookie.
I know. This is David and Nikki Nellis. It's Industry Night at the Line Hotel. We'll be back in just a second.
Up all night with the same thing in my head, just wanting you here next to me. It's been a long time, don't you agree? We could turn it all around if you say to me. I wanted you to stay. Come on, baby, let me hear from you. So many memories rushing back again to me. Remember how good things used to be.
You're tuned into Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast on Full Service Radio. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Industry Night with Foodie and the Beast, David Nikki Nellis. I let Nikki be on the show because I'm such a great guy.
You are.
Look who just dropped into the studio, snap my fingers,
whoop, whoop.
Eric Bruner-Yang.
Woohoo!
Hey, what's going on?
So what did you tell me to say? Hey, Eric, what's going on in your life?
Well, wait a second. Okay, maybe I should have done that a little better. So for those of you who don't know, we are here in the Line Hotel, where Eric Bernierang has not one, but two restaurant concepts. He has his brothers and sisters and spoken
You're like
English.
A mogul or something.
He is.
Yeah. Last night I was just the host, so.
What do you mean?
Like, I literally was just hosting.
You were just hosting?
Yeah.
Well, there's something to be said about that.
Yeah, it was very I think I make a good maitre d'.
Actually, what I just realized is you've cut your hair since the last time I saw you.
No, you just never see me with
my
hat off.
No, he's always in a hat.
Oh, is that it?
Yes.
I'm actually on my way to get my hair cut.
Oh, I think it looks good. Yeah. Well, tell us what's happening here at the hotel with both concepts, because it's going to be a year.
Yeah, we hit 1 year. Holy crap. Yeah, we hit 1 year this weekend.
Amazing.
That's insane.
It is insane.
Like 10 pounds heavier and 30 ulcers later.
I know, but to be fair.
Wait, why are you looking at me when you say that?
That's 10 pounds earlier.
You're just.
It's just the way you're sitting.
Yeah.
Hey,
we're sit up straight.
We're both slouching.
Yes, it's the nature of those seats. So talk a little bit quickly about Brothers and Sisters and Spoken English and what's been happening here, because it's a scene. It's a scene at the hotel.
So first and foremost, with our great partners, Full Service Radio, they have started scheduling DJs every Thursday, Fridays, and Saturday nights that start at 10 o'clock.
Fabulous.
Some local, some regional, some national. So that's been fantastic. I think one of the things that Brothers and Sisters, and you guys can attest to this, it's always the first drink place. You're going to meet all your friends, you're going to have your first drink or your first snack, and then you're going to go out to your next place.
Without a doubt.
And so we're trying to keep that crowd here after first drink or start bringing in that second wave of people.
Maybe go where you go afterwards.
Or where
late
you go
night,
afterwards. Yeah,
right?
That's something we really have to build
here. What time is the bar open to?
Bar is always open till classic DC last call, so 2:30 on the weekends and 1:30 on the weekdays.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, okay, so that's what's happening with the restaurant. You got the DJs coming in now.
Yep.
You did launch a tea menu, which I personally am obsessed with.
Yeah, we do afternoon tea. We call it afternoon tea because I'm not good with rules, and there's too many rules when you call something high tea.
Yes.
So we do an afternoon tea every day from 4 to 5.
Wait, I thought you were supposed to get high and then come in and have tea.
Yeah. That's at Gregory's Coffee.
Whoa. Wait a minute. Have I been doing it wrong?
There's edibles down the street. You can get them down there.
No wonder.
There's
a
dispensary.
I'm going to sneak some in for you.
Yeah, exactly.
There's other people here doing it, I bet.
I have no doubt.
So we do afternoon tea daily from 4 to 5:30. It's about 20 different treats, half savory, half sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So half by me and half by the wonderful Piché Yong.
Mm-hmm.
And for the holidays, which would for us, which mostly Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, or just December 24th and December 25th, we'll do an extended afternoon tea from starting at 2 o'clock.
Oh,
for
fabulous!
For those 2 days,
I love that. Okay, that's a great offer.
Plus dim sum, we'll do dim sum all day here.
Christmas Day,
Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
Here come the Jews. I'll be here.
We'll be here.
Yeah, Chinese food. That's what we got to do.
We do Chinese food.
Hell yeah.
We are the stereotype. That is what we do.
I missed the mark. I did dim sum for Thanksgiving, but apparently people don't want that for Thanksgiving.
No, so our
family. No, that would be the dim part of dim sum.
No. So my family, every year we do huge, crazy Thanksgiving. Yeah. And then
the next day.
We go for dim sum.
All right.
Every year.
Next year, that's what I'll do.
20 of us.
Oh, yeah. It's insane.
Okay.
We do it every year.
All right. Next year.
Yeah. So that's how you get the Jews.
Her family's exhausting, by the way.
Yeah. We are exhausting.
Well, I miss, DGS. I used to always do a Chinese dinner at DGS.
Right.
We did that every year they were open.
Which was so much fun.
Yeah. So this will be
all right, cool.
For that.
I'm glad you're doing that here. And anything else coming up that you want to share with everybody?
New Year's Eve is huge here. It's an RSVP party. You guys came last year.
We did. It was so much fun. We had a great time.
No cover, right? You get to come to the Line Hotel.
Yes.
No set charge, so you can spend nothing or you can spend a lot. So it's up to you. So I think that's a nice thing to do.
Large quantities of French fries
and caviar.
Yes.
On top of the fries.
We did not order the caviar last year. We ordered mass quantities of French fries. I
and
do
champagne.
Recall that. And champagne.
You know what? I would be down with that again this year. We don't even have any plans.
We have no plans.
Really.
No.
We had a good time.
Yeah, we have a great room rate. I think it's like $250 or $300. You get a bottle of actual champagne from Champagne, France in your room.
Mm-hmm.
And you get free breakfast the next day.
Oh, that is a good
And
day.
In our case, you can wake up hearing it. We can wake up hearing ourselves on the TV.
Yeah, that's right.
Broadcast into the room.
She's like, I'm trying to take a break from that.
Right, exactly. All right, one last thing. Tell us just quickly what's going on with Spoken English.
Spoken English, What is going on with that?
Well, how about giving us a 411
They speak English. We know that.
What is spoken English? Spoken English is what I call a standing pub or a tachi ni moya. We do these really...
That's easy for you to say.
Yeah, we do these really kind of refined Japanese-Taiwanese snacks or large plates, focusing on yakitori and roast duck and really great, fun interpretations of different vegetable dishes.
Are you still doing the chicken skin?
Yeah, we do this great dumpling called the chicken skin dumpling.
Okay, so not really going with what we've been talking about plant-based living, but...
I'm the opposite.
This is the opposite.
With a lot of vegetables.
The enemy's here.
There are vegetables, but there's some chicken skin involved.
I make my living on chicken. Lots of chicken everywhere, every restaurant.
All right. Well, great. Eric, we'd love
Thanks
for you
the
to
pop,
yeah, pop in anytime. We'd love to get your cocktails guys in here, too.
Yeah.
Or if you have other people who've got stuff going on, we'd love for you to pop in and keep us posted.
I'm going to get in trouble, though, because if I keep doing this and not my actual show.
I was going to say, are you doing an actual show? You
yes. Were?
Yes. Is he?
Sort of.
She's like, maybe. Yeah. Maybe he's done one. Well, you can.
I'm waiting for the inspiration.
I can be your inspiration. Guest-driven. Have me on your show.
You guys would actually be great.
Because
it's about food stories, not about food, but more about immigration and like the story of being an American.
I'm a first-generation American, yeah. So there. I'm a Minsky Pinsky.
Yeah. And having that story is that's what we talk about.
Cool. I remember coming across Europe and
actually, let's just stop this. We'll record mine. Jack will get off my back, and then we'll keep
that's right. This is great.
You have an immigrant.
Yeah,
right.
We're ready.
We have an actual immigrant.
We're ready.
There we go. Okay,
thank
great.
You so much. I'm sorry to interrupt your...
No, well, you didn't interrupt at all. I love you popping in. Thank right. you, sweetie.
Thanks for the
all
snack.
Right, all right.
This lemon date ball is amazing.
Is it amazing?
Amazing.
Thank you.
How do you think they got their legs apart, though?
That's so stupid. Anyway. But everybody laughs.
I know. Because everybody's stupid, right?
All right. So,
Rod.
Yeah. Rod, we're going to go back to you now. Now that we've discussed chicken skin. Bye. Bye, baby. So what we were talking about before the break... and before we were so rudely interrupted, was about, so you've launched this concept now.
Yeah.
You did all your research with Dennis Friedman, and you do your site location, and you decide to open your first shuk 2.5 years ago in the City Vista area.
Correct.
And so what were some of the pitfalls initially that you were like, oh, fuck, I didn't expect that. Like what was the hardest part?
A couple of things. I'd say, you know, we deliberately went into a new, evolving, emerging neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's a belief in the future, but also...
Well, with a ton of construction, I might
add.
With
a ton of construction.
Tons of construction down there. The road, Mass Ave, like that whole area's construction, and then you had all the new build. Like, there's a lot going on over there.
A lot going on. I remember we launched in May of 2016. I remember... the launch was amazing, lines out the door. Then July came around, and I had my first taste of what it's like to be a restaurateur in the summer in D.C., which I've, you know, heard about. But,
right, but you weren't prepared for it.
But we were just sitting there looking at each other. But, of course, we weathered that and continued to grow very rapidly. So now I know the gig, and I understand how the market works. But that was one big surprise.
Well, and there's also been changes in the market because since you've opened, you now have things like Caviar, Grubhub, Uber Eats. So you have all these new ways of doing delivery for your food to get that person who's not going to come to the restaurant, right?
Yeah.
So the lazy person or the person who can't get out of the office.
It's quite a few of them.
Yes, exactly. I'm definitely one of them. But those ways of transportation for food are sort of good news, bad news, because I know they take very large margins from the restaurants.
They do.
And you're adding to the carbon footprint.
Absolutely.
There you go.
But they are another way to get your food into the hands of people who may not come.
How far out will you go?
It really depends on the partner we work with, and we work with three of them.
So who do you work with?
So Uber Eats, DoorDash, and Caviar are all partners of ours for delivery. They all have their own
systems,
their own radius, and Uber Eats actually changes it from 1 minute to the next depending on...
Right, it's out of your control. Right,
completely out of our control.
I mean, Uber Eats makes the most sense to me just because of the proliferation of Uber drivers around the DC metro area. So, like, that so much makes sense. But from a business standpoint, I mean, I've seen your restaurants that have multiple purveyors, and you've got like 16 different screens. And I mean, I don't know how you keep track. It won't flow through one system, right?
And now for us it is. About a month ago, we invested in integration that now
the guy's a computer
Oh, right. Good programmer. Point. Right. He's in tech. Right. I forgot.
I can't take credit for that.
Right.
But so now all the orders coming in through the various iPads, which we still have to maintain, but at least automatically they flow into our normal system and end up in the kitchen. But that's only a month old for us. Before that, it was hairy.
Right. Yeah. I bet. It must have been difficult. Okay. So now you open up your second location.
Yeah.
And that's over. I mean, in another up-and-coming area. Yeah.
You see a pattern here?
So these are intentional.
Yeah. You're a masochist.
No. But you're doing this for a reason.
We're doing this for a reason. And I think for a young restaurant company, it makes a lot of sense.
The rents are right.
To go where the future is, not where the past is.
Sure.
And
Penn Quarter. Penn Quarter is a great example. A lot of people, fast casual concepts open in Penn Quarter and they can't stay open.
No, that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. I think there are markets where the fundamentals and the economics no longer make sense. Mm-hmm. It's all about putting a flag, not necessarily having a sustainable business. So that's one reason. But we also, we're cold shook, which means market in Hebrew, as David mentioned. We are very careful about picking locations that we feel are a fit to our brand and the brand we're creating. Obviously, Shook in Union Market kind of makes sense.
Sure.
There is a market there. There are markets there. We love the vibe. We feel that we complement it and vice versa.
And what about catering?
So we've been doing catering for just over a year now. And I have to say, and it's been growing very rapidly for us. A lot of office lunches, birthday parties. And
shouldn't you be catering bar and bat mitzvahs? What's the matter?
So we just did, actually, the last weekend we did a big Jewish fundraiser for one of the big organizations. 300 people. It was a Hanukkah party.
Wow.
We made all fresh latkes on site and falafels. And it's been,
I'm stop you for a minute?
Yeah.
There are applesauce latke people and sour cream latke
people. Sour cream all day long.
Yeah, but he doesn't do dairy.
Oh,
is there a trick?
We had dairy-free sour cream.
Oh.
I mean, that...
So what is that made with?
The particular one we use...
Chicken.
No. Chicken skin. No, that one is actually made with soy.
With soy.
With soy,
okay.
Yeah.
So you don't shun soy products, necessarily.
No, I'm not against them, but that's not what we offer typically.
That's not what you typically
offer. That was more of a one-off.
Let's talk about engagement with the... I know you don't like the word vegan.
No.
Why don't you like that word?
It has baggage. And
what way does it have baggage?
I think
you
I
mean
think
like
over
in the chef
years,
world it has baggage.
I think broader than that.
Kind of a hippy dippy word. Isn't
it's
it?
It's a word that it's a word that evolved over the years with a connotation of compromise, of lack of people associate the word vegan with I cannot have something, I cannot do something, or I have to eat lettuce and tofu and quinoa or pasta primavera because that's the only thing I have on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
So for no fault of its own, I think over the years, just because of the state of what was available for people who are following a vegan diet, it carries this baggage.
So what do you call it?
First of all, we don't call it anything.
They call it shuk.
We call it shuk, and we lead with our identity, which is the Israeli street food one.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have to call it something, we'll use the word plant-based, but typically we don't have to. And I would say about 85 to 90% of people coming in the door at shuk are not vegetarian or vegan, and many of them have no idea. They just walked into a place that follows those guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them realize it throughout their experience, not all, and that's fine. They're not there necessarily to eat a plant-based meal. They're there to eat something good.
Do you do latkes there?
No.
That was just for Hanukkah.
That was just for Hanukkah.
I would eat them every day of the week. Are you kidding?
Oh, no, they are good. So how do you engage with people? How do you engage with the uninitiated who is not vegetarian or vegan? How do you engage with them when they come in the door and they're like, wait, can I put chicken on that? Or, where's the protein? For those who are so used to having it as a component in their meal,
sure.
There's an educational component for some
Absolutely.
People. How do you engage?
Absolutely. We explain to them that we don't offer any animal protein, but there's a lot of protein in our food.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
burger is
packed. Not something that I would necessarily say to a guest, but that's where cows get their protein also. We just go directly to the source.
Actually, that's a great...
That is a great line.
Marketing
line. I love
line.
That. Yeah, I do
we
love
bypass
it.
The cow and go directly to the source.
I love that.
So, you know, we have a lot of protein by virtue of some of the vegetables that we use. And, of course, the legumes and the nuts and seed carry a good amount, often equivalent to what you would get elsewhere. You know, we tell them about the best sellers and what people love. And and most often than not, they're willing to give it a shot. And I've never had a single case where anybody was not surprised and delighted by the flavors and the textures and the fact that they could enjoy
How
meal.
Do you market the place? Are you on social media? Are
yeah.
you?
Yeah, social media. We've had the honor and to have had a lot of coverage in the DC market. Really embraced us, the Washington Post. I don't know if you noticed, David, we won best fast casual third times.
Yeah, I can read. I know.
So I think obviously those kinds of accolades and affirmations help a
Helps.
Lot.
Helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, plus, you know, as more and more people are trying to, if not go vegan or vegetarian, but are trying to do one day a week, you know, like Meatless Monday was very big a couple of years ago. People are trying to find ways to lessen their intake.
There's
of
a name
meat.
For it now.
Yeah. You know, they're trying to do it, but it's not, it's
what's the name?
So this is the new thing. It's called Flexitarian.
Yes. Flexitarian.
And that's where the big revolution
well,
is happening.
Well, that was from Mark Bittman. Because Mark Bittman did that book,
right.
basically vegan before six.
Right.
So he would eat primarily vegan. And sometimes
and then have a regular dinner.
And then sometimes at dinner, he would incorporate chicken or meat or something like that. But he found that by limiting his meat intake, he lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, we just saw him. He's kept it off.
And it's you know, better for the environment, obviously. That's one of the things we're discussing here. Yeah. You know, for me, one of my struggles is that carbs are a problem for me in my build. So I feel that a lot of plant-based eating is heavy on the carbs.
I think it can be, it doesn't have to be. But I also think that from a nutrition perspective, I don't know that the carbs categorically are the culprit. I think there are carbs that are good for us and those that are not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a type of carbs, you know, potato.
Right.
Is wonderful versus white bread. Lesser.
Right, or rice.
This is bullshit because you have not gained or lost 2 pounds since the day I met you. And that's been 25 years.
Well,
so.
I appreciate that in some way. It's like a backhanded compliment. But
why would that be backhanded?
Because you said this is bullshit.
Well, I'm saying, you know, carbs.
Right, but, okay, so here's the thing. I'm in the food world.
Yeah.
I eat for a living.
Yeah.
And I also work out and try to have a good relationship with food and take care of myself. So when I'm not out for work and I'm not eating for work, I do try to limit my carb intake because for my body frame and type, that is a lifestyle that really works for me.
Perfect.
Do you know what I mean? But and I don't eat a lot of processed food. I mean, that's just not part of my go-to anyway.
I think that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, so with what you're serving at Shook, you... By not serving tofu and things of that nature, you're sort of eschewing all processed foods, right?
Yes.
But when we talk about like your cookies or your date balls, like we haven't even really talked about it. Like, what do you make? What's in the cookie?
So the cookie is we call that a choco cardamom cookie. So it's a chocolate chip. Of course, the chocolate is vegan, semi-sweet. Mm-hmm. The cookie itself is made with a good amount of cardamom, which is kind of our spin on a traditional American chocolate chip cookie.
Mm-hmm.
And it has coconut oil, flour. It's not, you know, it does have gluten. It does have flour, sugar, what you would expect to have in a cookie. So it's
now
not,
let me ask you a question about sugar. And this is a total, this one's out there. But I did not, like, I remember seeing vegan sugar for the first time and thinking, what? Isn't it? It's sugar. Isn't it all vegan? But it turns out it's not, right?
Not all. Yeah, it can get pretty esoteric as you dig into how food is made.
How they filter it.
How they ground it.
They filter sugar or ground it with cow bones.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Isn't that weird?
It's very weird.
So I assume you use vegan sugar.
Yeah.
But I remember learning that and thinking, who knows that? Like, that's not something that everybody knows.
No, once you start living this lifestyle and if you care enough and interested
and
to really dig in, the most esoteric stuff comes out.
Is there anything else?
So did you know that a lot of wines are not vegan also? Especially the French wines. Because filtering and fining are done with bone marrow or fish byproduct or eggs.
Like the eggshells, right? Yeah. The eggshells, because they pull out the impurities.
Yeah.
Right.
The French are famous, notorious, famous for using a bone marrow in that process.
I have never heard bone marrow. Yeah. I've heard eggshells, but not bone marrow. No, I'm sure most people don't realize that.
Yeah, it's weird.
So is there a market right now for vegan wine? Because again, it's just like sugar. I'm sure most people think, it's grapes. Isn't all wine vegan?
There's a market. I think it's probably fairly niche at this point.
Right.
But also manufacturers, unless you're a very traditional old world wine producer who sticks to the tradition, most of the industry is moving away for cost reasons.
Sure. I mean, it sounds very expensive to incorporate bone marrow into your wine, right? As a way to purify it or whatever it is. That's fascinating.
Especially if it's still attached to the cow.
Okay, that's stupid.
Hard to do.
Any others that you were shocked by? I'm putting you on the spot.
There's not a lot, and especially if we avoid processed food and stick to real produce, then it's pretty easy from that perspective.
Now, with at Shook, how often does the menu change? I mean, is the seasonality of vegetables a priority, or because you're basing it off of an Israeli diet, does it really sort of stay the same throughout the year?
It has changed quite a bit since we opened, more according to our whims than anything else so far. Mm-hmm. We haven't settled into any kind of seasonal cadence.
Okay.
Not to say that we won't, but it really depends on what we get excited about. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. My parents used to take me to this pool outside of Netanya, which is named the city I grew up in Israel. Summertime, every Saturday, we used to go to the pool. I didn't love the pool that much, but there was a great sandwich that they sold there. They sold a pita with omelet and fresh vegetables. And I cannot shake that memory. Mm-hmm. And so I was bugging Dennis, let's recreate that. Let's recreate that. And, we came up with this eggless omelet idea we made from chickpea flour. And that was, made it on the menu, and it's a huge success. And but that's how it came to be. Just a childhood memory that I was craving to have again and not choosing not to have eggs, needed to come up with a different way to do
it. Well, there's that new product, too. That new...
Just eggs?
Is it
that
just...
what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think so, right?
Yeah.
But is that... It's not processed. It's naturally made, right?
Well, even things that are processed could be naturally made.
No, but you know what I mean. Like, I guess it is processed, obviously. But, I went to a whole thing on them. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, we make our own right at Shook every day.
That's incredible. That
sounds
delicious.
We don't need to buy anything. Yeah.
All right. So what's next for Shook? What are we looking forward to?
We're working on a new exciting dish that I can't describe.
Okay. Really helpful.
It's a secret. Let's just have 5 moments of silence here.
Okay.
Well, we recently launched falafel, which has been a big deal for us because it has been expected of us to do it since we've opened, and we've decided not to despite daily
requests. What was your hesitation?
It wasn't a hesitation. It was a deliberate decision. We knew that we would do it well. Mm-hmm. Pardon the confidence.
Not at all.
We didn't want to be labeled and defined as a falafel shop. We wanted to showcase our other culinary talents. So we wanted to wait until we could build a reputation on things like the breakfast pita, the omelet, the veggie burger, and then roll in falafel yet as another item to the lineup and not as the end-all be-all. And we just did that.
Okay.
So that's about a month old. It's been received extremely well. Mm-hmm. So we're still riding that. We are looking to expand in short order.
Oh, come on.
D.C. area, or are you looking to start hitting the suburbs?
We're looking in D.C. proper, so the immediate suburb as well. We haven't made any decisions yet.
Kensington is very nice this time of year.
Especially this time of year. Yeah, exactly.
So wait a minute. So it's just the three of us here talking. Okay. Tell us about this other thing.
I can't.
Oh, come on.
No, come on.
I mean, I'll be your best friend.
He said no.
I thought you already are my best friend.
No means no.
I mean, I am your best friend, which is why you should tell me. All right.
Give me a couple weeks.
All right.
Well, the show is over anyway. If you would please tell everybody where to find you online and on the street.
Perfect. So we have two locations. First one at 655 K Street Northwest. We are just around the corner from the convention center, north of Chinatown. And our newest location on 395 Moore Street, which is at the corner of 4th and Morris Northeast, two blocks away from Union Market.
Right, and not far from, and right around the corner from the new Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's, same building across mm-hmm. the street from Blue Bottle, which I frequent.
So you'll see Ron there. See,
yeah, my wife is not so happy about that.
It's got to be affecting your sleep.
It's affecting my wallet primarily. Okay. And online, we are at www.shouk.com.
Excellent. And you can be found on Caviar and
DoorDash,
Uber Eats.
And Uber Eats.
Excellent. All right. Yeah. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Do you want to say anything or can I wrap
I
this up?
I just want to say it has been fun.
It has been fun.
It has for me too. Thank you.
I crack jokes. I mean, we've been on the air for 10 years, and I think she's laughed four times, and two of those were today, right. So
that's
I'm feeling pretty good
true.
About it.
So it has nothing to do with me.
Right, no.
Okay. Well, you could be the catalyst. Who knows?
Well, so this has been an incredible conversation. I think a lot of people are trying to bring more plant-based dining into their lives, knowing that eschewing meat products is better not only for their health, but also for the environment. Yes?
Yeah, you've said eschewing twice. I like that word.
Okay, it's an SAT word. But anyway, and Shook is a terrific answer for that. And I think you guys have a wonderful mission, and you're very good at educating people
and
about what you're doing.
Beyond that, the food is good. Okay. So, you know, well, thank I you. Just, you can hump, but we can, I mean, that's the thing. That's what's most important to me.
That's what's most important, period.
It's good for you, but it really tastes good.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Well, we want to thank you all for joining us today. This is Nikki and David Nellis, Industry Night with Foodie in the Beast. You can hear us every Sunday live on 1500 AM with our Foodie in the Beast show.
At 11 AM.
At 11 AM. And
get
we're
up.
Also
get
on Facebook Live. Don't get out of bed. Stay in bed and watch it on Facebook Live. Or you can hear us here on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel. Thanks for joining us.
You can end every sentence with in bed.
Okay. Can't Are you we? Done? Can I wrap this up?
I guess so.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Have a delicious week.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.